Hello and welcome to Fitness Mentor's presentation of Chapter 4 from the National Academy of Sports Medicine's Essentials of Personal Fitness Training. My name is Eddie Lester, and let's go ahead and get started on Slide 1 as we're doing the PowerPoint presentation. Slide 1 intros the chapter, and it is called Exercise Metabolism and Bioenergetics. Let's click over to Slide 2. So the objectives for this lecture are to basically describe the primary methods of how the body produces energy for exercise, differentiate between and define aerobic and anaerobic metabolism, distinguish which energy pathways are used for various intensities and durations of exercise, understand the interaction of carbohydrate, fat, and protein as fuels for exercise, state the differences in the energy use during steady state and exhaustive exercise, describe basic training-induced adaptations in energy production. So let's click over to Slide 3. So bioenergetics specifically refers to the study of how energy is transformed through various biochemical reactions. So you can think of bio meaning living and energetics meaning energy. And specifically, we typically refer to process of bioenergetics like metabolism and or exercise metabolism. And metabolism just refers to all the chemical reactions that occur in the body to maintain itself. A lot of people talk about having a fast or slow metabolism. What metabolism mainly just refers to is every energetic reaction or chemical reaction that you need to survive. And exercise metabolism is going to refer to your metabolism under the stress of exercise. And typically, exercise metabolism is elevated because you have to do more chemical reactions and more body processes in order to keep your body running functionally and efficiently. So let's go ahead and click over to Slide 4. We have nutrient substrates, and nutrient substrates are going to be called macronutrients. These are proteins, carbohydrates, and fats. And they constitute the main substrates used to transfer metabolic energy to be used for all types of cellular activity in life. So we use these three compounds, proteins, carbohydrates, and fats, to fuel our entire lives. And specifically with protein, when we digest proteins, we break them up into amino acids to be absorbed in the body. And then when proteins are absorbed, they are transformed into working proteins within our body. Carbohydrates break down into from starches or larger disaccharides. They break down into plain sugar, which is a monosaccharide, such as glucose, fructose, or galactose. And those are used for storage and immediate quick energy. And then we also have fats. Fats are broken down in the digestive system into fatty acids and absorbed and can be used for storage of fuel. They can be used for immediate fuel and or to be used in the oxidative process in creating a lot of fuel to fuel like endurance exercise. So we're going to start off on carbohydrates in the middle of Slide 4. Carbohydrates provide the body with a source of fuel and energy required for all daily activities, including exercise. And the storage form of carbohydrates is called glycogen. That is important to know, as NASM really does like to talk about the storage form of glucose or the storage form of carbohydrates in the liver and in the muscles, and we store it as glycogen. But specifically to go back to carbohydrates, it's important to understand that whenever we do high-intensity exercise, almost all of the fuel that we use comes from carbohydrates. So it is going to be important to replenish the fuel that we use during high-intensity exercise by eating carbohydrates potentially after that meal. Looking on to Slide 5, another important source of energy is fat. To go over fat is the chemical or substrate form in which most fats exist is called a triglyceride. And fat is mainly used as fuel during low-intensity, long-duration exercise. And it's important to understand that fat is used during like low-intensity, long-duration exercise. Something like a marathon would be important to know. And the third fuel source is going to be protein. Protein is going to be a building block, or like the cellular builders, in a sense. And as far as nutrient substrates that are providing energy, during a low-calorie diet, protein can be used as fuel to supply carbohydrates via the process of gluconeogenesis, which is basically generating a glucose molecule from amino acids. Gluco meaning sugar, neo meaning the transformation of, and genesis meaning the creation. This is why muscle loss typically happens when you are using the low-calorie diet method of dieting. Because when you have a low-calorie diet, protein, which is vital for, you know, muscle repair and muscle building, can be used as fuel and takes away from that muscle building ability and potentially leads to a loss of muscle, especially when you're on a low calorie diet. And specifically to define the gluconeogenesis again, at the bottom of slide 5, it is the formation of glucose from a non-carbohydrate substance, such as an amino acid. All right, moving on to slide 6, energy and work. So the whole point of taking in nutrients and these macronutrients is to eventually lead to the production of what we call, or of what NASM refers to as ATP, or adenosine triphosphate. And it is one of the primary sources of immediate energy for cellular metabolism, and it's stored in chemical bonds. So the whole point of our lives is to produce this, or as far as energy goes, is to produce this ATP, or adenosine triphosphate. And specifically, the reason why is because when the chemical bonds that hold ATP together are broken, energy is released, and that is what causes cellular work, or that is what is utilized for the cell to work. And this leaves behind another molecule called adenosine diphosphate and creatine. Adenosine diphosphate is one phosphate removed from the triphosphate. What's cool about creatine is that creatine attaches itself to that free phosphate, that extra phosphate that's available, and will allow, or then creatine, once it attaches to that free phosphate, can donate it back to an ADP and create another ATP. For that to make sense, basically, all I'm looking for you guys to understand is that supplementing with creatine pre-workout can potentially benefit your ATP CP system and prolong it, therefore causing more work and more ability to build muscle. So, and that is more or less proven by the supplement and scientific communities. So, to perform mechanical work, ATP is required. That's the ending of slide 6. Let's move on to slide 7. So the three energy systems that generate ATP are going to be the ATP-PC system, the glycolytic pathway or glycolytic system, which is also known as glycolysis, and the oxidative system. So the ATP-CP or PC system, they can be used or called interchangeably PC or CP, as it's phosphocreatine or creatine phosphate. And this provides energy for short-duration, high-intensity work. And I put a little star by that, as it is going to be important to know for the test. And by replenishing, or what this does is it replenishes ATP extremely rapidly by, like I mentioned before, having the creatine donate that free phosphate to an ADP molecule to create another ATP. And this typically lasts for about 6 to 10 seconds. This is going to be like Usain Bolt on a 100-meter sprint or 100-yard dash. Very short duration, but it's very high intensity. So glycolysis is going to produce work for about 30 to 50 seconds. So it's going to be like an intermediate range of producing ATP. And it provides energy through the breakdown of glucose to create ATP for moderate intensity, moderate duration work. Something in that 30 to 50 seconds. One event that might use this pathway the most would be something like a 400-meter sprint. And then finally, we have the oxidative system. This is going to be the most complex of the three systems. And when studying biochemistry and how our energy systems work, it gets extremely in-depth. But luckily, we don't have to be able to explain that to our clients. So it's not 100% important to know the ins and out of it. But on the next slide, we'll go over a little bit more about it. So just to finalize off that bullet point, the most complex of the three energy systems is the oxidative system, and it is the process that uses substrates with the aid of oxygen to generate ATP. So let's move on to slide 8. So the oxidative system, there's three parts of the oxidative system. The first part is going to be aerobic glycolysis, and that's going to use oxygen and sugar to create ATP. The Krebs cycle can use protein, carbohydrates, or fat to create ATP, and the electron transport chain can also use protein, carbohydrates, and fats to create ATP. And all three of these use oxygen to create a lot of ATP, but in a long amount of time. So to kind of talk about the oxidative system, it over a longer term, like above 60 to 90 minutes, fat becomes the primary fuel source when we do long-term exercise. And it also, or it can be metabolized aerobically via the oxidative system. And an important bullet point is that fat is the preferred fuel source for aerobic activities of long duration, like a marathon. And this is, you know, going over these 60 to 90 minutes of steady state cardio. And the first step in the oxidation of fat is called beta oxidation. That used to be an important question that came up on the test a lot, but recently has taken more of a backseat and might show up on one of your quizzes, but nothing more than that. So the oxidative system produces a lot of ATP, but very, very slowly. So you have your quick energy system, which is your ATP-PC, 6 to 10 seconds. You have your glycolytic pathway, your glycolysis system, which is about that 30 to 50 seconds. And then you have the oxidative system, which is going to last about start at about 2 to 3 minutes and last for the rest of your exercise activity. So moving on to slide 9, energy during exercise. Intensity and duration of exercise are inversely related. The amount of energy available from stored ATP and phosphocreatine is very small, as it is stored in the muscle, whereas the amount of energy from stored carbohydrate has a greater capacity, but is still limited. And the amount of fuel available from fat is pretty much unlimited, or the total amount of body fat that you have on your body is the amount that you can use for fuel. And this is why during starvation state, you start to lose body fat after days and days and days of not eating. Good, moving on to slide 10. Energy during exercise continued. Costs of exercise may vary depending on the condition. So this is where we get into with personal training, why you might do exercise that might be standing as opposed to seating to burn more calories. They specifically point out that lying supine burns fewer calories than standing. And specifically after that, they mentioned that the body prefers the oxidative metabolism. And they also go over something called excess post-exercise oxygen consumption, which is going to be an elevated level of oxygen consumption after strenuous exercise. For instance, after you run a mile, you don't just stop and then you're completely back to normal, caught up, you've caught your breath and everything. It takes about, 4 to 5 minutes to slowly slow your breathing down, get in the amount of oxygen that you need in order to bring your heart rate down. And during intermittent work, which is like circuit training, glycolysis provides energy for work, while the oxidative system provides the energy for recovery. Moving on to slide 11, the fuel contribution during exercise. So this is going to be important to understand how different substrates are used during exercise. Remember I mentioned earlier that sugar or carbohydrates are used for high intensity exercise. So anytime we do like a high intensity 1 mile run or a 10 minute circuit, different things like that, we're going to be primarily using carbohydrates. And the way that they figured this out was something called respiratory quotient. And respiratory quotient basically is the amount of carbon dioxide expired divided by the amount of oxygen consumed. So it's CO2 out versus O2 in, or oxygen in. And this can be measured at steady state and or at rest. And you can analyze how or what type of fuel is being used as a fuel source. So a respiratory quotient of 1.0 indicates that carbohydrates are supplying 100% of the fuel. And this is going to be like during a 100% max effort sprint or a high intensity circuit training session, you're going to have a respiratory quotient of 1.0. And a respiratory quotient of 0.7 indicates that fat is supplying 100% of fuel. And this is during extremely low levels of intensities. You wouldn't only get to a respiratory quotient of 0.7 while you're sleeping. So basically there's very, very little energy being used, but it is 100% from fat. And that is at a respiratory quotient of 0.7. And anything in between the respiratory quotients of 0.7 to 1.0 indicates a mixture that both fat and carbohydrates are supplying the use for fuel. And so if they were to say what is a respiratory quotient of 0.8 or 2.9 indicate, it would just mean that there's a mixture of carbohydrates and fats that are being used as fuel. So moving on to the final slide, just to kind of summarize things, bioenergetics is the study of how energy is transformed through various biochemical reactions. We have metabolism, which refers to all the chemical reactions that occur in the body to maintain itself. We have proteins, carbohydrates, and fats are the main substrates used, and they're all used to create ATP, which is a chemical form of energy derived from three pathways. And the three pathways, once again, were the ATP-PC system, the glycolysis system, and the oxidative system. And then we finalize everything with the respiratory quotient, or RQ, which determines the percentage of fat, carbs, or protein utilized in exercise. And specifically, it's mainly just the percentage of fat and carbs used during exercise. So look down the page and check out the audiobook lecture, and then complete the quiz and assignment for this module. And I look forward to seeing you next chapter.